Like what you hear? You can access exclusive content and other perks at patreon.com/theunionedge.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the wonderful and great things you're doing for the community, that's for sure. Hey, this program is sponsored in part by Teamsters Local 406 and the West Virginia AFL-CIO. We appreciate their support very much. Joining us today, we've got Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio. Buck, welcome back.
It's indeed a pleasure to be with you, brother.
Brother, it's always a pleasure. And you brought a friend.
I do. I do have State Representative from Grand Rapids, David LeGrand. David, thank you for joining us today on the Union Edge. We appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
A little cold outside. Are you inside?
I am. I just walked down the street and got myself chocolate milk for lunch, but yeah, I'm back in now.
David, you know, today I wanted to talk a little bit about, there's been a lot of discussion here lately about the local governments and their some of them being in trouble with their unfunded liability, and we kind of call this, we call it OBEB, but it's other post-employment benefits. Where are we at with this? What's going on?
Well, Buck, so you know, look, we all know in America we have a hard time, or the reality is that the cost of health care keeps going up faster than inflation. And I'm not sure that's all avoidable because, you know, if we come up with better procedures that help people, people are going to want them. I would. Like, if I need an artificial hip, I want it covered, right? We couldn't do artificial hips 50 years ago. So there are reasons why those costs continue to go up. However, it's also true that, like, let's remember, we have a national health system. We have an OPEB system for everybody in this country. It's called Medicare. We provide it for everybody when they hit 62. And I have never heard a senior say, man, my health care coverage is terrible. Like, Medicare works, right? So you got to keep this all in that context. Now, in that context, you know, a lot of good employers have historically, and some of them have been public employers, provided with health care for retirees, which is great. But we got to be honest about what the costs are, and we got to account for those costs. And that's good, too. Now, about 5 years ago, back in the day, we did pay-as-you-go for everything. So, you know, how you funded pensions was, well, do you have enough money in the bank this year to fund this year's pension obligations? Yes. Then we got something called GASB, which is a nice standard accounting practice, where we said, look, you got to treat these things like they're coming out of a trust fund. You got to have enough cash reserves to be able to actuarially smooth this out, predict that pensions are really going to be there so they don't disappear. And that's great. So we've had those discussions about stabilizing pension funds, and that's all good. Well, about 5 years ago, the accounting folks said, well, you got to do the same thing for healthcare costs. And that's good, too. But what happened, at least in Michigan, was we suddenly had this conversation where instead of going pay-as-you-go for health care costs for retirees, we said, okay, we're going to go with these new accounting practices, and look, we have these huge liabilities. Well, the liabilities didn't mean it's an accounting thing. It doesn't mean that we weren't paying these costs going forward, local governments weren't. It means that best practices is they should have some serious cash reserve to account for the likelihood that these things will increase in cost over time. Great conversation to have, right? But it's a little bit like, you know, the first time you recognize, the first time you recognize a problem, you try to solve it simultaneously, or you declare, you know, the need for bankruptcy. It'd be like if everybody in Congress tomorrow said, national debt's bad, so we have to pay it off by Tuesday. And if we don't, everybody at office gets fired, or we close down government. I mean, we know we got a national deficit. We know we got a national debt. We need to have an intelligent conversation about how to manage that debt, but you don't try to pay it off next Tuesday, right? You come up with a 20- or 30-year plan for paying off your national debt if you're responsible. Those are the two ends of the discussion. And so in Michigan, we had a really good initiative. The governor said, look, we need to have an honest conversation about this. So we put together a study group, and it was composed of members of organized labor, governmental units, variety of people, and they all came together, and they came up with a series of recommendations. So far, so good. What happened then was a couple members of my legislature decided to go way past these recommendations with a series of bills. Mm-hmm. They proposed them, and the good news is the forces of reason prevailed, and where we wound up was exactly where we should have started, which was saying, okay, let's go with the recommendations for the task force. Let's come up with some reasonable plans and recommendations and best practices for local government and let those local governments try to implement those plans. So I think we've actually now had a good discussion about responsible funding for retirement costs, and we've got some recommendations. But what I'm really happy about is that didn't get overreached. Like, so we were there was a moment last week when there were when police and fire unions were really, really concerned that people were going to be taking away their retiree health care, which would have been a huge blow.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not there now. We won. So we saved police and fire pensions this week. I was there till 3:30 in the morning or so on Wednesday to get it done, but we got it done. So today was a good week, even though I'm a little sleep deprived.
You know, David, they talk about these local municipalities being in trouble. How many of them are actually, I mean, I'm not asking you for a solid number, but how many units are we talking about here?
Well, a lot of local governments do this, have OPEB plans, and a lot of them are, on these GASB terms, underfunded. And I don't just mean, you know, underfunded like less than 100% funding. I mean, like,
right,
have very little money put aside for this. Like, they're almost 80% underfunded. And you know, because you and I both know, sometimes people will freak out about a plan that's, say, 80% funded.
Right.
And that's not honest, right?
No.
Because if you take a snapshot of a plan and you're at 80%, well, that's actually pretty healthy, depending on the circumstances, right? It doesn't necessarily be anything under 100 isn't necessarily in trouble. It could just mean the stock market had a bad year, right?
Right.
And of course, by the same token, I think all of us as citizens have to be careful that if you get a plan that's got, say, 120, 130% funding, we demand that our politicians mm-hmm. don't just give that money away, but save it for a rainy day. Because, like, nobody can predict where the stock market's going next year, right? I mean, this mm-hmm. isn't a show about the stock market. We're not on, I'm not on Jim Cramer's lightning round, but, like, I don't trust these numbers personally. That's a discussion for another show. But,
right.
You know, I don't particularly trust the stock market at the level it's at right now.
Well, you know, and so I guess the long and the short of it is, right, is if they're in multi-employer pension plans, the ones I was involved with, is if someone was in trouble, they needed to submit a plan to basically discuss how they were going to get out of problem. Is that what's going mm-hmm. on here in the state now? I notice now they have a three-person, what they call a stability board, and mm-hmm. then if someone is flagged, then they have to basically submit a plan to these people and then go from there? Is that what that deal is?
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was
okay.
some earlier discussion about going way past that.
Uh-huh.
And, for
right.
example, stopping any new employees from getting retiree health. Well, I'm not okay with that, right?
Right.
Like, frankly, I'm a progressive. I want universal health care for everybody.
Right.
And so I certainly don't want to be taking it away from union members. I want to be giving it to everyone. I want to be going way past where we are now in America. And I think we could. I think that, frankly, like I said, we've got universal health care in this country already. We just call mm-hmm. it Medicare. And I think if we just rolled down the age of eligibility on that over time and funded it, we've got
right.
a model. Given that it
right.
works for the elderly population, which is the trickiest population to mature, I got no reason to think that Medicare wouldn't work for healthy 25-year-olds.
Right. Right. Okay. David, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the fact that they're looking at the signatures to deal with prevailing wage. We'll talk a little bit about that. I'm Buck Gino, and you're listening to Union Edge, Laborist Talk Radio.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter.
For more tax-free driving tips, visit StopTextStopRex.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
You know what really gets a party started? Indoor baseball. Yeah, just find a broom or a pool cue, and you can use, like, anything as a ball. Cans, bottles, shoes.
Hey, bro, toss me that avocado.
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Underage drinking and driving, the ultimate party foul. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
We are the BCTGM fighting for American jobs. Nabisco, maker of iconic snack brands like Oreo, Ritz Crackers, and Chips Ahoy, has made its fortunes in America, and its patriotic response has been to send U.S. jobs to Mexico. As a result, consumers across the U.S. continue to boycott their Mexican-made products. Corporate revenues are down across North America. Consumers are sending a loud, clear message. Now, religious leaders from all faiths across the U.S. are calling for an investigation into this Nabisco business model and have scheduled a 6-city tour to look deeper into the matter. Just as the NAFTA negotiations are in the forefront, the faith community will begin to talk to workers, politicians, and other faith-based leaders addressing this U.S. jobs exodus by Nabisco from a moral and ethical perspective and widely publishing their findings. The BCTGM and Interfaith Workers Justice, its faith-based coalition partner, ask all people of faith and social conscience to join this fight against Nabisco's exploitation of workers in the U.S. and in Mexico. Millions are already not buying Nabisco products made in Mexico, and it's already impacting their bottom line. Join our fight for moral and economic justice at fightforamericanjobs.org.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone.
I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Allison is perfect. I mean, she'd never tell you that. She's humble and perfect. She likes everyone. She even likes her untidy roommate's weird guinea pig. Allison, wait, are you texting and driving? Allison, no. That's the exact opposite of what I was just saying about you. Why, Allison? Why? Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopRex.org, brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Like what you hear? You can access exclusive content and other perks at patreon.com/theunionedge.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon. Hey, this program is sponsored in part by IBEW Local 5 and the Operating Engineers Local 66, both of the Pittsburgh area. We appreciate their support. Joining us by phone, Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio. Buck, welcome back.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Charles, always.
Brother, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. And you still have a friend with you today.
I do have David LeGrand. He's a longtime friend. He's a state representative from Grand Rapids. David, thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Love talking about this stuff, Buck.
David, you know, it seems I've been got 40 years in the labor movement, and it seems like I haven't. It seems like since I've been in, there's always been this attack on prevailing wage, and whether it's good, it's bad. Let's get rid of it. And there was a period of time where we got rid of it for a couple of years in Michigan. And you know, as a union organizer, at that point in time, people don't want to hear it, but life was good. It was easy to convince people to come join the union because they weren't getting paid anything. And the other thing that people should know about prevailing wage, I think, is that the prevailing wage is not just the union wage; it's the average wages paid for a service in an area, mostly in construction. I would agree, but it's the average wage, and every 10 years or so, someone gets it together and does a survey, and that is submitted to the state, and that's how the prevailing wage is determined. And if the non-union contractors wanted to have their wages as the prevailing wage, they would quit having to be so lazy and submit to the survey, but they don't. That being said, we have a petition drive, and it looks like they've got enough signatures, and now they're being counted. Tell us what happens next.
Sure. Well, what happens next is we're going to go to a vote of the people on the issue. And
frankly, given the alternatives, that's not such a bad thing, because the alternative would be politicians just go ahead and doing what they want to do, and then you look at who's in the majority. And in Michigan, I'm not sure what the outcome would be. And I would rather have a community conversation about this because, well, for a number of reasons, right? And for one thing, I'm never scared of democracy, and I'm never scared of having a community conversation about things, because at the end of the day, we may not always make the right decisions as a community, but, you know, if we believe in democracy, we've got to be able to make bad decisions sometimes, too. But if we have to have a community conversation about this, let's have it. Now, frankly, I think that this is a good time to have a broader community conversation about a living wage. And, you know, prevailing wage is part of that discussion, right? It's one of the things that helps people in some trades get a living wage. But that means let's have a conversation about the fact that, you know, more and more Americans are spending more or 40-50% of their income just on housing. If you're making, I mean, the federal minimum wage right now is a joke. Michigan at least has got a slightly higher minimum wage, but it's still not adequate. $8 an hour is not enough to make it in this country. I don't care what state you're in. And, you know, the national discussion about $15 an hour federal minimum wage, well, you know, I'm not going to speak to federal policy because I'm not a federal politician, but I think we need something like that in Michigan, because I know in my town you can't make it on the state minimum wage. You can't really get housing. You can't live with dignity. And so the prevailing wage, I mean, this is what we sometimes, you know, people on our side of the fence talk about as a race to the bottom, right?
Right.
I don't want to go. At the end of the day, you give power to the people who own the capital and control the businesses, and they'll take it all home. I mean, they'll take as much profit as they can get their hands on. What we need as a community is to have a conversation about supports for people in the community who are working so they can live with dignity. And let's go have that conversation. And let's have a conversation about, you know, let's have a conversation about that for people at Burger King, too, and people who, you know, are, and let's have that conversation about, you know, people who are, there are 4 million people in this country right now living on $2 an hour, and we don't talk about that. I mean, we need to talk about basic supports for people, because human beings have the right to live in dignity, and they don't have to prove that to anybody, as far as I'm concerned. They don't have to prove they deserve food and basic housing and medical care. That's not something you have to, I don't want anybody to have to feel like they prove to me that they deserve that. And God knows I don't want anybody to thinking that children have to prove they deserve that. Mm-hmm. They deserve it because they're human beings and they're precious. So let's have that conversation, you know? This is a conversation about all of us. It's a conversation about what our values are. We're the richest country in the world, and if we can't step up and level the playing field. And, you know, Republicans always want to call it class warfare. They can call it whatever they want. I call it discussion about human dignity. And there are people in this country who don't think that everyone deserves to live with dignity. And if you're in a situation where you're not living with dignity, their response is you should have tried harder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I find that morally repellent. And I will tell you, Buck, like, the only successes I've ever had in my life have been because I've had a supportive community around me helping me.
That's right.
You know, people like you have helped me. You know, people come to my businesses because they want to help support me in my business ventures. It's not because I'm so wonderful. It's because I live in a community where we have each other's back.
Exactly. You know, one of the biggest fallacies, though, about the prevailing wage, which kind of angers me in some ways, is they make this think that this is some big benefit to the union. Which, and really what it is it is a form of a way to basically raise the income of people that don't belong to unions. Because they have contracts, they have collective bargaining agreements, and they go through that process every average of about every 3 years, and they negotiate a package of wages and benefits. The non-union people don't have that benefit. And if you can raise up the prevailing wage, that helps them. And I guess seeing that, I, I don't know how they could even get the signatures they got. I guess
that's one of the reasons I have always been so proud to be standing by my union brothers and sisters. Early on in my political career, I remember there was a question about raising the minimum wage in Michigan, mm-hmm. and the UAW held a rally for it, and they asked me to come down and be supportive. And I thought, man, nobody at the UAW is making a living making minimum wage. They have no direct interest in this at all. They are just trying to help everybody else in the community. And, you know, that is the tradition of labor, right? Labor is a group of people who can look at the broad picture and talk about justice and talk about values. And that is a legacy to be proud of. And you're right. This was part of that same discussion. So when you say, you know, good for the unions, tend to support prevailing wage because it's good for everybody.
Exactly.
It helps everybody out.
You know, and like I said,
just
have to prepare.
You know, it doesn't help billionaires much at all.
No. And it doesn't hurt them either.
Sorry. I forgot about the poor billionaires.
Well, is there anything else coming up, David, that we should be aware of here before you guys are you guys done yet, or you still got a little work to do?
We got next week, but, you know, I think that's going to be tying things up and goes. I will tell you that, you know, I am going to be working on Michigan is now at the point where we have the pathetic distinction of being one of only two states that doesn't require financial information to be disclosed by legislators. And
okay.
Iowa is Idaho, I'm sorry.
Yep.
So that's going to leave us number 40. We're going to be the only damn state in the union that doesn't require it. So I am going to be working on that issue early in the new year. I have a proposal, and I'm hoping to get some of my colleagues to join me on it. And so government transparency is a big thing I'm going to be – so we can talk about that in the new year. The other thing I'm going to be working on is reforming the cash bond system in Michigan. That's something we need to have a national conversation about. I don't care where you are. Cash bonds are, generally speaking, a bad idea. Courts should be assessing whether people are dangerous, not whether they're rich, when they decide whether they get to go home or not. And that's something that really, really trips up people who are working for a living, because a lot of them can't afford a cash bond. So rich people get to go home, poor people get to stay locked up, and then they lose their housing, they lose their jobs. It's a mess. And so I'm introducing legislation on that in the new year. I'm very excited about that. But that's a conversation that has to happen in every state.
We look forward to talking to you in the next couple of weeks. We appreciate it.
Right on.
Appreciate everything you do for us. Thank you.
Yep.
That being said, for Charles Showalter, Angela Bachman, Brittany Sheets, I'm Buck Gino, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.